I think a lot of people saw he had a fall at this Air Force event. And, you know, I don't know if he sustained injuries, but I just want to say that we hope and wish Joe Biden a swift recovery from any injuries he may have sustained. But we also wish the United States of America a swift recovery from the injuries it has sustained because of Joe Biden and his policies.
Welcome to this special edition of the New Hampshire Journal podcast. I am Michael Graham, managing editor at nhjournal.com, the number one political newsletter in the Granite State. Thank you to all of you who subscribe to it for free. And thank you to that hearty band of you who subscribe for $4.99 a month to the same newsletter you'd get anyway. Really appreciate it. You may have noticed some new bylines. We're able to do some additional reporting because we have additional support. So please support nhjournal.com. If you're not sure how, just go to the page at the bottom. You'll see a little support NH Journal button. Click there. And all of your support greatly appreciated. So normally the podcast, we like try to do 30, 40 minutes, you know, try to make it worth your time, have at least one interview, maybe two. But this is a special podcast because we got, I think about like 12 minutes with the Governor Ron DeSantis. And so we have another interview already in the can. I got to chat with New Hampshire Senate President Jeb Bradley about some amazing Democratic shenanigans going on at the State House. That story hits Sunday night. That podcast will be in the newsletter Sunday night. So it's coming, but a lot of people are interested in what Governor Ron DeSantis had to say while he was in New Hampshire on Thursday. And in particular, the story that we broke about the reaction to Kayleigh McEnany and the attack from her old boss, President Trump. I think that is a significant story. I also have some thoughts being here on the ground in New Hampshire covering the race, and I want to share all those with you. But instead of me blabbing on, I want to share the interview with Governor DeSantis with you, in part because I think I hear some things in the conversation and I just want to make sure that they're really there and I'm not projecting. So listen to our conversation. We'll chat afterwards and then the conversation will continue at nhjournal.com. One thing I got to do though is a big shout out for Dr. Bruce Houghton at PerfectSmiles.com, Perfect Smiles of Nashua. Dr. Bruce and his lovely bride, Stephanie, they help make this podcast possible. So if you are in New Hampshire, you just moved here, you're looking for a great dentist, Dr. Bruce, Nashua. If you're one of the national media and you have a dental emergency, hey, back when I was a regular on Fox News doing a lot of TV, and if you've met me, you know I don't belong on TV. The reason I have a great smile for TV, I got it from Dr. Bruce. He did it for me. Fantastic job. And I was just in for a cleaning, actually, the other day. And one of his new staffers, who I didn't know, she's doing cleaning. She goes, wow, these teeth look really good. He did it like years ago. And he's best of the best, total professional. And that rare time, you can say he's very good at what he does. And he's a great guy, too. You want to say that about people. Like, for example, candidates for president of the United States. You want them to be competent and you want them to be likable. Dr. Bruce, run for president. I'm Michael Graham. Here's my conversation with Governor Ron DeSantis of Florida. So let's start with the question we asked because we're the only center-right news outlet in New Hampshire. Campaigns kind of a buffet. You want to have items so that lots of people want to gather on the table, different flavors, different folks. What are the items on your buffet for New Hampshire Republican primary voters specifically?
Well, one, I have a proven record of winning, and I think we have a culture of losing in the party. We've got to get it right in 2024, and we've got to be able to win people like independent voters in New Hampshire. You know, in Florida, we won independents by 18 percentage points in my reelection. Florida's kind of a microcosm of the country. We've got people from the Midwest, the Northeast, the South, all right. That stuff. And I think that that's very, very important. New Hampshire should be competitive in a general election. It was not in 2020, and I think it should be for Republicans. So I think on a political side, that's really important. You know, on the substantive side, if you look what we've done in Florida, similar to what we need to do nationally, you know, we're very fiscally prudent. We run big budget surpluses. We're leading in new business formations. We're leading in net in-migration, leading in education. All these things that are really, really important. We've also been very strong on things like illegal immigration. You know, I sit around looking at this border. I've been hearing about this border for decades from Republicans. We will bring it to a resolution. We'll do a national emergency on day one. We'll close the border. We'll build the border wall. We'll stop mass migration. And we will hold the Mexican drug cartels accountable. You know, in Florida, we've been leaning in on immigration. I've got people at the border now helping Texas. We banned sanctuary cities. We just cracked down on human smuggling. And of course, I was the one to send illegals to Martha's Vineyard. So I think it's very, very important. We do need a reckoning, though, with what happened with COVID. And I think that those policies were disastrous. Nobody has been held accountable. And I think the direction that the federal establishment and the elites are going in is to do the same thing again if something like this were to happen. And that is totally unacceptable. So I'll bring accountability to those folks, and we'll make sure it never happens again.
So two things. One, I used to live in Massachusetts. I have Elizabeth Warren's home address if you need someplace to send some people. Secondly, you mentioned COVID. One of the fights in COVID is, where is the right place for mandates to come? You have a public health emergency. Obviously, actions have to be taken. Florida took action, particularly based on age, you know, segregating older folks. But should those mandates come from Washington, from the state, from local communities? In New Hampshire, it's a very local community ethos. People look at what some of the fights you're in about, should the government use its authority to get into, say, a private sector fight with someone like Disney, and they wonder, where's Ron DeSantis going to have the power come from my local town or from Washington, D.C.?
Well, definitely not Washington, D.C. I mean, it's absurd. I mean, the CDC has no obligatory power. Right. We will not allow that to happen. Biden is trying to actually do international treaty with the World Health Organization, which is basically a lockdown treaty, and he wants to jam that down. I actually passed a law in Florida, signed a law that says we don't recognize that because he's not going to get it ratified by the Senate, so it's not binding law. So under no circumstances should the federal government be involved. Now, look, I would push back a little bit on these mandates. I mean, I think that what they proved, I think they ultimately proved to be very ineffective. And I think that when you're talking about public health, I would not allow any public health bureaucrat to have any authority to mandate. You know, places like LA County, you had this woman there.
Right, she was
like a crazed public health nut. And she's imposing mass mandates and all this. No way that should happen. And so Florida, we curtailed the emergency authority of our local governments. You know, if they're going to do something, they're going to need to get a ratification. And so I just think that it should be advisory. If there's something with COVID, it should have been advisory. You advise on what we know and then let people make their own decisions. Now, we did take action in Florida for nursing homes and things like that. Look, on the one hand, you know, we definitely saved lives initially. On the other hand, you know, I recognize as time went on, there were costs to that because it deprived people the ability to have adequate visitation. And so what we decided to do, you know, after a short while, was like, listen, we're going to empower the nursing homes to make these decisions and their patients to make the decisions because, yes, this virus was significant. When it got in nursing home, it was very deadly.
Sure.
At the same time, it's also deadly to not let people have the type of human interaction that they wanted to do. So I just think I think it should be advisory, but definitely no federal role at all to impose. Now, I will say with COVID, what happened when they did the Fauci guidelines, a lot of like particularly big companies, hospitals, they took that as mandatory. Disney, for example, and the theme parks, they closed in Florida based off that. I didn't close them. They did it. And so I would make sure that our CDC, and first of all, we are going to totally upend all those agencies, so they're going to look very different.
Right.
But I will make sure that anything they're doing would be advisory, and it would not be something that people would be required to follow.
So Governor Sununu said that in this imbroglio between did Governor Cuomo or Governor DeSantis do a better job with COVID, he sided with you. So a little hometown love. Speaking of that Trump-DeSantis thing, today New Hampshire Journal broke the story of a state rep who had endorsed Trump at his big event in April, was up on stage with him. Today he said, I'm out. And he's out for an interesting reason. I want to ask you about it. He's out because of the way President Trump treated Kayleigh McEnany, who's now on Fox. She was a spokesperson for a year, and he really, you know, trashed her. And there's been a lot of buzz in the MAGA community here in New Hampshire, people saying, come on, man, we're on your team. We're trying to be loyal. Where does loyalty fit in your pantheon of virtues in politics? How important is loyalty to you? And also, do you have a comment on picking up an endorsement today because Representative Spillane jumped over to back you?
Sure. Well, a couple of things real quick. First, saying that Cuomo's New York was better than our free Florida is insane. And we know 95% of Republicans in this country would have rather been in Florida. And we saw how people voted with their feet and fled the lockdown right. jurisdictions of Florida. So for him to say that is crazy. But I think it's an indication that he actually believes the lockdowns worked and he would double down on what he did in March of 2020. I think he needs to admit those policies were flawed and he would not have done that again. I don't think he's willing to do that. Second, Kayleigh McEnany is... I mean, look, Donald Trump had, even his greatest supporters acknowledge, he had a tough time picking good people. He had a lot of terrible personnel decisions. People like Jerome Adams, his Surgeon General. Obviously, he elevated Fauci to lead the task force.
Are you saying Anthony Scaramucci wasn't a winning pick? Is that what you're saying?
There you go. So we know that there was a tough record, but Kayleigh was one of the greatest selections. She did a fantastic job, and her family's from Florida. She's from Florida. So, you know, we were very proud to see her up there. You know, it's funny because, like, you know, she's obviously, you know, she's younger, she's attractive, blonde, so people think, she's going to be some... She's a Harvard-trained lawyer. She's an absolute killer, and she ate the press alive. And so for him to be attacking her, you know, I thought that was really, really bad, and it's not something that I think is good. But here's the thing. I think the voters in New Hampshire, just from the ones I talked to and in Iowa, they don't like this pettiness. Right. You know, they don't like the name-calling. They don't like all that. Mm-hmm. You know, we've got big issues to deal with, and we should be focusing on Joe Biden and his failures. That's what I'm doing. Right. You know, I'm not out there shooting at other Republicans unprovoked. And so I think that that's what we need to do in terms of the rep that came over. Right. You know, we appreciate that. I agree with that assessment.
I got to say, we had a piece the other day that got a lot of feedback about the fact that here we were on Memorial Day weekend. There are about 20-ish people running for president on both sides. If you add up the maybes and the wannabes and the Larry Elders, whatever. One person with military service. And, of course, I'm happy to be talking to him right now. And the issue wasn't, you know, is your service good or bad or whatever. But how are we at the point where you've got 20 people on lead the country? We went from Truman through W where everybody had military service. Does military service just not matter to primary voters, to American voters anymore?
Oh, I think it definitely matters to primary voters because I have them coming up to me already. And I would be the first president elected since 1988 that actually served in a foreign conflict. And I think that our veterans really think it's time to have a veteran in the White House. I think the reason you don't is because since we have an all-volunteer force, you know, all those other presidents were drafted. Or if they volunteered, they probably would have been drafted. And like H.W., you know, he volunteered and whatever, so it's good. I was in a situation, you know, I was a blue-collar kid. I was working minimum wage jobs, but I worked my way through places like Yale and Harvard. I had a lot of ability to make money, but I chose to do it.
I'm sorry, I have to interrupt right now. This is what I've been dying to realize. My mother... If I had gotten through Yale and then Harvard and said, I'm going to go join the Army, she would have grabbed me by the ear, dragged me to Wall Street and said, see that firm? You are working. What did your parents say when you told them you were going in the, not just the military, but a military where people were shooting at people?
You know, I think that they probably would rather that I wouldn't have done it, but I also think they respected
it. Did they say anything?
Yeah, no. I mean, I think that they were ultimately proud of doing it. But yeah, you know, I mean, I could have made a lot of money, and I had never been in a position to make money in my life, and so we did. But I just felt after 9/11, you know, you serve your country, and I just wanted to do a small role, but I wanted to do my part, and so we did it. But I think because it's an all-volunteer, the reality is there's a lot of people that have options in life and they're going to pursue those other options. So I think, unfortunately, you're probably not going to have as many veterans. And so I think of all 50 governors, I think this is right. I think I'm the only governor who has served in a war as well. Of all 50, I think so. I'm certainly the only one that's done a post 9/11 conflict.
Right. Your favorite baseball player of all time?
Oh, man. You know, I think at the end of the day, the GOAT is Babe Ruth because he was he redefined.
Dude, you're in New England. So we're going to do take two, someone who didn't abandon the Red Sox and cause a curse.
Because I think he was also one of the best pitchers of all time. But look, if you want to talk about one of the greatest Americans to ever play, I would say Ted Williams. And he was obviously one of the best, if not the best hitter. But his numbers are crazy, and he served in World War II and in Korea. And he was he's arguably the greatest hitter ever, arguably the greatest fighter pilot ever, and arguably the greatest fisherman ever. Like a lot of people can say that. And so very, very special guy.
Ladies and gentlemen, proven on the podcast that Ron DeSantis is politically nimble and is able to step out of a hole. Thanks so much for your
time. Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Yep.
Thanks again to Governor Ron DeSantis for his time. Also, my apologies, the audio quality was not fantastic, but I thought it worked. So, The first question I got when we were done, I was talking to folks about the interview, was, what was he like? And I can't remember ever doing an interview where people wanted to know what the person I was talking to was like as a person. And I think that shows one of the challenges that the Ron DeSantis camp is dealing with right now, particularly here in New Hampshire. And my answer is, he was a pretty normal guy. I mean, he was a politician giving an interview to a reporter. He friendly enough, it's fine. I don't know, like, if I because the word awkward's been thrown around so much, if people were expecting me to come out and say, oh, it was so weird, he was picking bugs out of his hair and eating them. He's a guy who's been elected to office before. You've seen him working rooms. Is he Bill Clinton? Did he make me feel like I was the only person in the room? Which, by the way, I kind of was the only person in the room, but no, he was fine. He was serviceable. I will say, for those of you who are listening in other states to the podcast, that is my analysis of the DeSantis campaign in New Hampshire thus far, is it's serviceable. They're doing a fine job, not stellar, not, you know, rocking the boat. They're just getting started, obviously. People are hoping for more, and there's a lot of hope for that more, which tells me that people aren't getting everything they want. So my take on the Ron DeSantis campaign, New Hampshire, serviceable. He was, as a person, he was pleasant enough. You know, the have a beer test. Am I dying to have a beer with him? Please give me your cell phone, Ron. I'll give you a call. No. But would I be uncomfortable having a beer with him? Not. Totally fine. More interesting to me, answers to two questions. One, the Kayleigh McEnany story, which, once again, for those of you listening from out of state, it has been surprisingly impactful among MAGA Republicans, Donald Trump's treatment of Kayleigh McEnany. And from talking to a bunch of people, and we've got some new reporting on this as of Friday, it is causing so many headaches, or the response from Trump supporters is so negative that there are diehard Trumpers trying to tell people that Trump never posted it, that the post is fake, which obviously we have it linked in our news article. It's not fake. And so that, again, tells me this is really having an impact. Why? Well, what happens when people that Trump supporters hate attack Trump? They stick with Trump. They like Trump even more. What happens when Trump attacks people that they hate? They're on board. What happens when Trump attacks people that they don't hate, but they're just, you know, they're ambivalent about, say, like Mike Pence? They have no problem with Trump trashing Mike Pence. On the Trump DeSantis versus Trump thing, which is right now at a pace that it cannot possibly maintain. They cannot keep going at each other, you know, particularly on social media, the way they've been going the last couple of days. So how did Trump supporters respond to that? They're fine. They get it. Trump attacks DeSantis. DeSantis attacks Trump. They go back and forth. A lot of people at the town halls in New Hampshire said, I like them both. And as far as the attacks, it's just politics. So that doesn't faze a Trump supporter that he's going after people that they even like, whether it's DeSantis or Nikki Haley or anyone else. What makes the McEnany case different? It's Trump going after them. Kayleigh McEnany is a MAGA Republican. She speaks to and for MAGA Republicans. They watched her in the White House, as DeSantis pointed out. You know, she watching her, what did he say, eat the press's lunch, whatever, doing what they wanted her to do as one of them. This is Trump attacking one of his own. I think it's one of two mistakes that he's made. Will they impact the big picture of the campaign? I don't know. One, all this wiggle room about abandoning pro-life, suggesting that pro-life positions are a problem, backing away from his commitment to the pro-life folks. The pro-life folks, like my parents down in South Carolina, are purely transactional on Trump. They love the judges. They like what he did. They think he as a person is very problematic. But it's all transactional. If he doesn't keep up his end of the transaction, the evangelicals that we've talked to at NH Journal, they are more than happy to walk away. Not a lot of loyalty there. Then this attack, attacking Kayleigh McEnany in such a gratuitous way. If the MAGA people start going, oh my gosh, this Trump guy is so into Trump, he'll even turn on us. that could be a self-inflicted wound. Is this a major wound? Is Kayleigh McEnany a major player? No, but she's not nobody. And so this is a crack. It's a crack in the wall. Will it be followed by other cracks where loyal Trump supporters, people who've been mocked for sticking with Trump, who've cheered him on as he's attacked others, if they start feeling like they are the subject of his attack or that they are failing somehow, could that take us to the point where we get to the final chapter of the novel Animal Farm, where everybody's been basically cast out except the pigs, where no one's loyal enough and the people in power get what they want and everyone else just suffers? I don't know. I'm just saying I thought that was interesting. The other thing that's interesting from that interview, his reaction to the question about how his parents reacted when he chose to go from Harvard into the Navy to serve in Iraq. And the question was about his parents' reaction. And the fact that he really chose not to answer, kind of blew past it. I went back again. I will tell you, my parents, as I said in the interview, would have killed me. There's no way you're going to go from Redneckville, South Carolina to, you know, Harvard Law. And then I'm going to in the military like the rest of your cousins who didn't bother to finish high school. That would have been my parents' reaction, rightly or wrong, good or bad. But I thought it was really interesting that he had no comment on their reaction. No, yeah, well, my mom said this, my dad said that. And it's another indicator that this question about who is this guy, Ron DeSantis, who is this guy? I think it's the reason why the DeSantis thing has some resonance. Is he that kind of guy? Like, is he so, you know, absorbed into Italian culture that it matters how he pronounces his name? Is that the kind of guy he is? A guy for whom his ethnic culture is a big deal? Or is he just a guy who's a stickler about proper pronunciations? Or is this a family thing? Did it mean something to his grandparents and so it means something to him? I mean, there are a bunch of different stories that could all go into these episodes in Ron DeSantis' life. And the voters we talked to at NH Journal do not feel like they've even begun to scratch the surface of these stories. And that's what they want. You ask somebody, so who was Bill Clinton or who was George W. Bush? They have a story. You know, Bill Clinton was this, you know, prowl arounder down in the backwoods of Arkansas who, you know, was a smooth talking guy and he smooth talked his way all the way into the White House. George W. Bush, oh, he was a guy, his dad was famous, but he partied a lot, got into trouble. Then he had a literal come to Jesus moment, tried to change things around and got pushed into a place he never expected to be by the events of 9/11. I mean, ask the average political person to give you the story of these people. They have a story that they use to kind of put candidates and politicians into a narrative they can understand. And the Ron DeSantis page is so blank. As a guy who used to run campaigns, I find it very surprising. And I found his answer to that question surprising. I found the conversation fascinating. And I find myself stunned that you listen to the New Hampshire Journal podcast. But we really appreciate it. Please, if you haven't subscribed to our free newsletter, just go to nhjournal.com. There's a little button. It helps to have more names. I know a bunch of you get it through your friends. And just sign up. Please, be very nice of you. And if you wanted to really help out, you could support nhjournal.com. Thanks again for your time. I am Michael Graham. Thanks so much for listening to this edition of the New Hampshire Journal podcast. Please find us on Twitter, New Hamp Journal, on Facebook, NH Journal, and of course at nhjournal.com where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. I'm Michael Graham with Inside Sources. Thanks again for listening.